Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to VUX World with me, Kane Sims. Thank you for joining me. Happy Monday. If you are listening to this on Monday, I'm looking at my watch. I don't know why I'm looking at my watch. It's 5 o'clock, but it doesn't say Monday on there. welcome to VUX World. Anyway, as you can see, I am wearing the Unparsed t-shirt because it's all about Unparsed right now. The conference is kicking off in full swing. We're selling tickets every single day at this moment in time, and so if you want to be part of the AI conference of the year in London, June 17th through 19th, then you absolutely need to get yourself to Unparsed. We've got a design track where we're looking all at conversation design and how to create conversational experiences and AI automation experiences that do the job for the customer and for the business. We've got a technical track which is looking at how you actually build these things from a technical perspective, how you do things like prompt chaining, prompt engineering, how you hook up this stuff to business systems and APIs to actually make these things work properly. And not just how do you use RAG and what's the differences between RAG and fine tuning and all that kind of stuff, which we'll definitely get into, but also how you can take generative AI and mix it with some of the more traditional NLP technologies to make multi-turn dialogue systems that work. All right, and so if you are interested in that, which I am sure you are, then you definitely need to be part of Unparsed. We're announcing speakers weekly at the moment. We're going to have some new lineup of speakers to announce this week. We've got companies like Microsoft and Google and Amazon and you name it speaking at the event, and so early bird tickets are on sale now as well, so you can go to unparsedconf.com, and you can find out more about the event and get your tickets right there, and we'll see you in London. All right, now then, on with the show. My guest today is Scott Hamilton. Scott Hamilton is the principal for banking and lending strategy, the leader there at Prodigal Tech. And we're going to get into what Prodigal Tech does, what Scott does. Scott's got an immense background in Lean Six Sigma. And we're going to also get into a conversation about how Lean Six Sigma applies to the world of AI automation. Because I know that you lot who've been watching this and tuning into VUX World for the last number of months and years keep hearing me banging on about how AI automation is more like digital transformation, it's more like service design than it is anything else, and that really the success to AI automation initiatives depends and relies on the business processes that sit underneath it. And sometimes the processes that you have in place are a load of rubbish. And Scott is an absolute expert on weeding out the waste in those processes and redesigning them to be more efficient. So I am absolutely excited and delighted to welcome Scott Hamilton onto the show. Scott, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Kane. I'm a big fan of you and the team, and I've only known everybody for, gosh, maybe 6 months, but I'm really glad to be here today.
Nice one. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's nice to nice to meet new people and nice to kind of know that we're doing the right kind of things, basically. So thank you for your support and thank you for joining me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad to be here. It's a great way to start the week.
Indeed, it is a good way to start the week. Can't beat starting the week with a nice podcast, a nice discussion with somebody interesting. So, Scott, tell us about yourself and tell us about Prodigal. Then, what is Prodigal and what do you do there?
Yeah, Prodigal is an AI company, machine learning company that takes unstructured conversational interaction data, turns it into structured insights, specifically for primarily consumer lending, vertical only. So we've been in business for maybe 5 or 6 years, have analyzed 500 million conversations. 5% of them have been a little bit off. The models have then been trained on that, and we've reached what we think is a greater than a human level of accuracy, which unlocks a whole bunch of new exciting use cases. So that's who Prodigal is.
What about yourself? How did you get to Prodigal? I mentioned in the intro there you've got a very esteemed background there in Lean Six Sigma and all that kind of stuff. What were you doing beforehand?
Yeah, I just a few years ago in the early 90s joined, for those that remember, GE Capital was one of the beginning investors or participants in Six Sigma in general. That's when I joined GE Capital. That's when I soon became a master black belt, lean expert for the business of a variety of businesses. So it was roughly a decade with GE Capital, roughly a decade with Bank of America. Don't do this math, by the way. I have a decade with Capital One. And then got the last few with Prodigal. So all the while, through all those businesses, leading sort of horizontal transformation strategy for essentially the big banks in the U.S. Not just functional optimization, but sort of horizontal customer value chain optimization, people, process, technology, policy sort of initiatives that that lean on everything we're going to be talking about today.
Wicked. That sounds good. Master Black Belt sounds so cool, doesn't it? Lean has so many sort of like cool sort of, I know there's like loads of different sort of like roles in Agile, and you've got Scrum Masters and you've got like some pretty cool titles, but Lean has to have the best possible titles, doesn't it? From all of those type of things. Master Black Belt is, wicked.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about it, but I'm not allowed to tell you everything, so you know how it goes.
Oh, yeah, of course. If you told me, you'd have to kill me.
part of the agreement. I absolutely love, and it'll come through, hopefully, in this discussion. Optimizing one thing for one function is one thing, but trying to optimize something important across the organization takes a very, very different skill set. And has a whole another level of value. And that's, I think, exactly what you're looking to talk about today.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to jump right in there then, what would be an example of one of those things where, you know, it's something that you're looking to optimize horizontally across the organization, to give the listeners a bit of a flavor for what we're getting into there?
I think there's lots of examples. You can pick the expense thread. You can pick the customer experience, NPS, revenue, risk. You can pick any of those. Just to pick one example, call center optimization is as close to you. Why are people calling? You can rebuild the environment in order to more efficiently or effectively answer a given inquiry, but to then try to figure out why at scale they're calling, and then look backwards up the system as to what may have caused it to begin with, or where you might want to invest in your digital strategy or maybe a different marketing message. Having that integrated understanding and analytics helps not just deal with those things that are coming into your contact center better, but actually prevent them and or preempt them or service them in a different way. It unlocks those types of opportunities.
Nice. And then in terms of a master black belt, what is it that a master black belt can do that a black belt can't do?
great question. Generally, it is teach and certify.
Right.
I started out as a black belt or a green belt or something back in the day, but basically leading various redesign efforts. Then taught 50 or 100 classes, taught others how to use those tools, and then began certifying others' capabilities to then lead various businesses in their transformation strategy versus sort of project by project execution type stuff. So being able to train others and then coordinate the activity of maybe 5 or 10 different sub projects in and of itself in order to cut across the business is what I spent a couple decades doing.
I suppose things change it's one thing to work on one project where you've got, you know, one process redesign project or what have you, but once that becomes basically a core business strategy, is we're going to re-look at all of our processes, and we're going to try and extract as much value as we can out of that, and it gets to a point of view where the entire business is focused on that. The skill sets presumably are required to be different than if you're just working on a narrow project.
100%. So look at an IVR automation, a smart RVR project that has tremendous value. But when you then get on the other side of that local opportunity, you then begin to figure out that when you can look upstream or append other causality, sort of sit, you know, what the transaction was upstream, you then can influence, spin up another project in marketing that might have some downstream functional implications on the IVR that you just redesigned. So being able to obviously implement a new technology in one place has tremendous value, but to get that whole second order of opportunity, you've got to invest a different skill set into what's going on across your environment that might be able to unlock a whole nother layer of value.
Mm-hmm. And for those tuning in who maybe is not familiar with Lean, what is Lean, if you were to, because listening to this show, there's going to be people who are designers, creatives, you know, developers, maybe even product owners, you know, managers, things like that, but perhaps not people who have spent their time, you know, working on business processes and you know, trying to extract value from redesigning processes and stuff like that. So for those kind of people who are maybe coming into this terminology for the first time, how would you describe Lean in the context of kind of business process redesign?
The easiest example is looking at a new application for credit or looking at the cycle time of a given process. Typically, you would assess that performance, you know, department by department. You know, we received 100 applications on at the beginning of the day, and by the end of the day, we processed 75. And tomorrow morning, we had 25 left over, and blah 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 blah. So you sort of look at the factory one function, one step at a time. Typically, from a Lean perspective, you might change the perspective of how you understand how the process is working from the unit itself. So the unit came in to step one of the process, received a 5-minute review from a given associate, was queued to somebody else, and sat there for 17 hours. It was then picked up by a different department and worked for 20 minutes, and so on and so forth. So the cumulative calendar time might be 6 days, but the actual value added time of that contributed to that unit might be an hour. Mm. So you've got 624, you know, 98% of process time in the middle that can be taken out. So redesigning subsequent activities to fire when the first one's done, what can be done in parallel, those types of things. So you get far faster. You find areas of risk or customer experience degradation or cost of waiting, sort of taken out of the system by looking at your capabilities from the unit that's traveling through your organization.
Mm. And when you say unit, you're referring there to, for example, somebody makes a request for a refund, and that request coming in is classified as a unit of activity.
Exactly. And that unit has certain requirements in order to get it finished. And typically it might go across multiple groups in order to add their piece of the puzzle. So you can, by, as an example, mapping out all of the activities, all of the wait times, you can begin to unearth areas of automation opportunity or different staffing models, et cetera, in order to get better, faster, cheaper.
And where would the place be to start? You know, let's say that you have a business that's looking at ways in which it can improve, that's looking at ways in which it can use it in the context of the people listening to this conversation, looking to utilize AI more effectively or begin to use AI in their business. Is there a recommended area that you would begin to search for? It's called waste, isn't it, in the Lean kind of methodology? Anything that's adding unnecessary time or, you know, things like that is not contributing to value is kind of waste. How would you sort of begin to identify which processes should we start looking at first?
Yeah, it's a great question. and I've followed your various posts for in the call center, for example. I'll just use that. You have smart IVR, smart routing, chatbots. They generally do a great job, and that's a fantastic place to start. What we've found, and maybe this is a good example, where you can, once you implement those, the capability that you just implemented stabilizes, but you probably unlock half of the value. You then typically, whatever the use case is that's first deployed, you begin to realize that it's wonderfully effective at, for example, half of, you know, preventing half of the calls from coming in. I just picked that example. But to understand what the other half is, in many cases that we found, you've got to train the models to be far more effective than sort of the base capability. So looking at all of the failure modes of that particular chatbot, for example, what are the types of use cases that it wasn't able to effectively train? You can then either figure out where to train the model specifically, or figure out how to treat that second half in a very different way. Maybe there's a proactive outreach for those sorts of things. Maybe there's a digital capability investment that gets layered into your website investment strategy. So it really depends. I can share a couple of probably more significant use cases if that would be helpful.
That sounds like a good idea. And just kind of before we sort of get onto that, you mentioned before that you would kind of, you go through and map that kind of process, and you'd be doing things like timing the time it takes from a unit coming in to going out and stuff like that. How do you kind of go about that? Would you class that as, so some of the people tuning in might be familiar with customer journey mapping, which tends to kind of map, you know, customer touch points. If you're doing it to any level of granularity, you might also look at the bits and pieces that sit underneath each touch point, what systems are at play, what people are doing, what kind of activities. Is that the kind of journey mapping that you're doing, but presumably with a bit more rigor, I would imagine?
You're 100%. Yeah. So not all, using the application use case that I'd referenced earlier, not every application goes through the exact every step. Many will skip certain steps. Understanding the scenarios that have something skip a given step and go to some exception process. But then at each node in the process, there's applications might wait for either a tech job to kick off or a resource to be available because they're busy with other things. You can see where the pauses, where the wait times are. But you also look at either from, is it a people-driven lag? Is it a policy that needs to be invoked and pull in a whole nother group? Is it a technology that only works at night? So at every node, you can unpack what percent of the applications go down various processes and how they are met with various resisting points or wait points in the process.
And presumably when you're doing this work, for some companies it's the first time this has ever been done. Some of them probably don't really know quite so much the state of what's going on. Would that be fair to say?
It's super fair. Very, very common. Most people like to work in their function. They understand it. They have control over it. They know how to optimize within their functional walls. Very few organizations have A, resources that understand how it all fits together horizontally, B, have the cross-functional desire to look and see what department A might be causing to pain on department B, C, D, and E. Like that requires a very different skill set. It requires leadership to be supportive of such an investment. And it takes a lot of bravery from whoever's carrying that torch from A down to Z to call out what they see. Mm. And in most cases, it's critical to pull in experts from each of those processes so that you collectively can understand what is actually going on. And it's enlightening. Every time I've done it, subsequent departments realize that something silly that no one really even understands why it's being done, but it's always been done that way, in preceding functions, cause them a tremendous amount of pain. So being able to look at an integrated understanding as to the process and whether it's a people or a process or a tech rule buried in some code that was created a couple decades ago, it's a goldmine if you have sort of the appetite to unpack how it all fits together.
Yeah, it can be scary though, I suppose, can't it? Because, you know, lots of businesses have old systems that have been there for a long time, you know, people that have worked there for a long time, processes that have been in place for a long time. And part of it's the same as anything else. I was going to put it in the context of AI, but I don't think it's unique to AI, because even just putting some of your services online in the shape of a website or a mobile app for some companies caused a hell of a lot of hassle because they didn't have the processes for it. And now the kind of next wave of that is, well, how do we implement AI across all of this kind of stuff? And so, you know, it's a weird sort of situation, isn't it? Where, like, would you say that does it come as a surprise to some companies when they start looking at doing more sophisticated levels of automation and they hit barriers? Or do you find that some companies actually they're aware of their limitations and they purposefully try and, you know, seek ways of solving it?
I think it's a fabulous question. I was thinking about it before today to understand what some of the drivers would be. One sense I had is, as a given technology is deployed, it's generally understood by a few people, and it's deployed in a particular department. You know. But over time, that technology is better understood, and eventually you have multiple groups that understand it and figure out how to work together using it or integrating it. And I think the scenario with AI is that's where we are in many businesses, where it's initially being deployed. For a long time, it was confusing and you know, fictitious for a while. Now it's being deployed within specific functions. And I think that the next sort of step change is when multiple groups start to understand how maybe the first gen of a call center AI solution was deployed, but how it could help educate them and improve their organization. So call centers drive efficiency, but can also expose call reasons that then drive credit strategy, different ways you can analyze customer sentiment and situational data can drive communication strategy in the marketing organization. So I think it's a learning curve of various AI capabilities that we're just traveling through that curve. To then get everybody comfortable, to then figure out how to work on it together versus one function at a time.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. And I suppose it's part of the natural sort of adoption of these technologies. Social media went through this very similar phase, didn't it? Where you have a small group of people that understand it, and then it gets more proliferated and stuff like that. But still, even though that's the case, there is still, you know, the difference between social media, I suppose, was that social media is an appendage to the business, technically speaking, and at least initially in the early stages. You create a separate Facebook account and an Instagram account and a Twitter account, and then the business funnels stuff through those channels, and maybe there's contact coming through those channels as well, but it's still kind of like a separate tool, if you like. Maybe it finds its feet and finds its way into the contact center, but still you've got some companies have got marketing that use it for one thing and contact center use it for another thing, but then HR use it for another thing, and it's like, you know, it still feels like a little bit of an appendage, even though it's probably more integrated now than it was. But with AI capabilities, you know, take Prodigal as an example, you're integrating technology into the very fabric of the business. You know, you're listening to, you know, real customer calls at a significant scale, and you take that one step further. It's like, well, what if you had that technology mediating those calls in the first place? And not just the calls, but every single email that you get, every single message that's sent, and all of a sudden you've got this fabric across all of your business channels. So it's a much greater impactful technology that if your business processes behind the scenes are not in good shape, then the whole thing is going to be a challenge from the very beginning.
Yeah, and forever we haven't had this, right? And it takes a lot of every function sort of a different learning curve to get comfortable with what it does and what it could do. And when you're trying to solve for an integrated potential solution across the organization, everybody has to be sort of ready for the task. It's quite difficult to redesign your credit strategy policy using the types of data attributes that your models can extract from call center or digital engagement data. It really is a different degree of knowledge and test and learn capabilities that are a little bit hard for people to rally around when they're at different learning curves. I can go down a couple of other particular use cases that we're finding most value in lately, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
The one that actually caused me to join Prodigal was, and hopefully your listeners will appreciate this. So most lenders in the U.S. have, and I'll just pick voice analytics as the reason around in the risk organization. How do we automate the call QA work? I happen to have been working on that particular problem statement at a top 10 bank in the US. Part of it was to have a better set of risk controls. Part of it was to understand call reasons and complaints. So we were wrestling with that set of solutions that are out there, and the technology that's out there is just not very good. The accuracy rate wasn't anything, and we're getting in more trouble with it than without it, quite honestly. So the models became very, very accurate, more accurate than a human, really helped answer those three questions. But what is becoming possible now that then drives to your integrated opportunity comment is where we may have redesigned the call QA function or the NPS reporting complaints function or something. But what is now being unlocked is being able to understand the consumer's situational data or sentiment or what they intend on doing. What did they intend to communicate? What might they intend on doing in the future? The one that is what I'm working on now as an example is the consumer's desire to pay. Do they want to pay? Not have they paid, not did they pay, but do they want to pay? If you can aggregate multiple channels of communication, the degree to which they engaged, what they said during those conversations, not only does it optimize your call center, as we've talked about, but you can begin to build probability models that then impact your credit risk strategies, your dialer strategies, your how you treat customers when you reach out to them. It becomes just, it unlocks a whole bunch of different opportunities for lots of functions to behave a little bit differently. I know on the back of what seemingly was a simple QA automation project is now transforming, you know, a large section of your whole credit risk strategy or how your organizations operationally execute on those strategies. So it's a really interesting sort of whole nother wave of opportunity that we're beginning to see unfold.
Interesting. And so was that the predominant reason why you wanted to join Prodigal then, was because of that, the fact that you were able to find those other opportunities off the back of that? Or
So I was with Capital One and I was consulting into some other competitors of Capital One, and yes, is the short answer is yes. I was they had technologies that were not very accurate. They were primarily smart IVRs or word search, you know, word search tools. And we were trying. We had a whole list of business use cases that we knew we could solve if we could just get the accuracy rate north of a human, basically. But every tool we found was sub 50. For the types of things we were trying to solve for. It's better than zero, but it actually, you can't make decisions off of that. So when I was at those firms trying to solve those problems, that's when I met Prodigal. And having models that A exist and using leading technologies, but then also trained with the quantity of data that you need in order to get the output to be as good or better than a human is quite rare and takes a lot of time. So that's when I met Prodigal, and a couple of weeks I was here, and now we've are doing those types of things.
And what is it that makes it that accurate then? I mean, I've seen on the website here it's saying that it's been trained on over 400 million finance calls. Is it the size of the training data? Is it something specific about the model in particular? Like, what is it that, because the accuracy on here is what, like 90, what is it? 99 point, where did I see it? 99 point something it says. Something crazy.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. Everybody's defining accuracy in different ways. It depends on what it is that you're trying to determine. But if you're trying to determine, you know, their intent on what did they mean to say, they may not have said the magic word that your typical product would go search for, but did they mean it? Did they mean to file a fraud claim, or were they just complaining about a particular transaction? Did they mean to say that they didn't want you to call them anymore, or were they just complaining that you called them too early? Those types of things. When you have enough data that is similar to each other, the models can get very, very accurate on you know, the more data you have and the more consistent the data is, the faster the models can get accurate. We've run tests. Sorry, I'm long-winded. Tests against Lambda or various GPT models, and out of the box, they might be 70 or 80, but they have a lot of hallucinations or missteps. And being able to then apply all of the historical data that our models have been built on, you can fix those missteps, basically. And at the end of that, when you can get north of 95% on, did they mean to say this or not, you can begin to act on the findings without having to revalidate them before acting, if that makes sense.
How would you determine that, though? How would you determine that someone was meant to say? Because presumably they would just say what they meant to say, wouldn't they? Is there more subtext in these kind of financial conversations? Like, what would an example of that be?
No, there's unfortunately there's thousands that then typically result in solutions only getting half of them right. So, as an example, someone may I'll pick a bankruptcy example in the US where if someone can't pay their debt, they would file for bankruptcy, in which case they're you need to treat them in a very, very different way. So if they say the magic word bankruptcy, it normally would hit a queue that would need to be reviewed. Did they said the word, but did they mean to claim that they personally had filed bankruptcy? So being able to understand not only what is said, but the context around which it's said allows you to qualify what they actually meant. So they may have said my neighbor filed bankruptcy, or if I pay all these bills, I'll have to file for bankruptcy, neither of which is really what you're after, to figure out people that actually did file bankruptcy. So you take that identification of a magic word, you then understand the hundreds of different ways that could be spoken in context, to then determine the 10% of the occurrences that actually meant bankruptcy.
Yeah. So,
hence why we focus on just consumer lending vertical. You put a lot of volume in just that narrow set of talk tracks, and you can train the model to that level of accuracy.
Yeah. So you're referring there to some of the other ways of doing that is the more kind of old school, traditional kind of keyword based listening, whereas you're using more of an intent based machine learning model. Yeah.
Exactly. And I was at previous banks using the former, and we found that the accuracy just wasn't there. You had to have an army of QA analysts validating what the keyword searches thought was true. The false positives and negatives were more than the positives. And you basically had to just start over. And there are a lot of large top banks that are taking out those technologies because it creates a bit of a false sense of security. And most of them that I've talked to are investing in exactly these models. But unfortunately, it's going to take them, you know, a couple of years to put enough volume through it of training data in order to get it to where they need to get.
Yeah. How have large language models and generative AI impacted Prodigal then? Because you mentioned there that, you know, you've done benchmarking and stuff like that. Yeah. Benchmarking is one thing, but you've got like market demand on the other side of things, where now everyone's interested in generative AI and stuff like that. Like, one, how has it impacted what you're doing? And then two, do you think that the training data and the model that you have, because it's been trained on so many deep financial conversations, is that as best as can be done? Or do you think there's also a value in the generative and large language model side of things? So first, how has it impacted you? And then second, what do you think the opportunities are? Or maybe it's not the opportunities, but what is it not? Yeah. Well, let's do the first question first, rather than answering two questions. How has it impacted you generally in terms of the market demand?
I think two answers. One is it has created a halo effect of people and businesses getting very, very excited about the potential of AI in their operating business that wasn't there before. So in that regard, it's really provided some awareness and some excitement around the technology in general. Specifically with Prodigal, it's helped a little bit, but it really hasn't helped a lot. We don't employ generative AI models that everybody on the line are familiar with to do the vast majority of what we do. There are some very rare examples where, for example, real-time call analytics for edge case conversations that our model hasn't seen a few million times, and the confidence level of the intent extract isn't there. So we will employ, we will invoke one of the LLMs in order to assist and boost our confidence scores of a given insight. So within our walls, not much, but it has created a good tailwind around the technology in general, and has gotten businesses acceleratingly interested in the space in general.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend, doesn't it? I think that it's excited a lot of people, got a lot of people talking about it, got a lot of people asking about it. but it's not always the best solution for the job, you know. When you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail is the thing, isn't it?
I think what we found at a high level was a human taking random samples and applying their judgment was something like 80% consistent. If you did the same assessment across, 100 agents, 80% would interpret the conversation the same way. I think our proxy was the word search tools that are out there were in the 30 to 40% neighborhood. LLMs were roughly, I think, 70-75, and highly trained, specifically trained and tuned, aka the prodigal models, were north of 90. And now I'm talking a lot about prodigal, but in general, if you take models, train them with a tremendous amount of very like data, you can understand intent and act on the findings when you get north of a human. And that's what we're just seeing unlocked today.
Nice. Do you think that the future then, in terms of, going from 90 to 100, is that feasible? Is it required? And will generative AI with more training help you get there?
I don't think it's required for most use cases. So smart IVR, smart prompts, chatbots, that they, I'll say out of the box are 60-70% accurate and highly therefore effective. I think to get to that next level of value, to get to the other 30-40%, to then extract insights that drive policy or strategy or fully replace sort of the next tranche of resources, you do have to get it north of a human. So that when you say that something is happening with this 10% of your population, you're going to be right 95% of the time, and therefore the risk of acting on those findings is very, very small. And the only way to do that is I've been able to find is with highly mature tech stacks and then data that's been specifically trained on whatever it is that outcome you're trying to find.
Nice. So going back to the lean stuff, do you find now in working with Prodigal and the work that you're doing with clients, are you still employing, even though your role's different, are you still employing those philosophies and things like that? Because I know that it's not lean isn't necessarily, it's obviously it is a practice, it's a methodology, and it's a very rigorous one at that. But also it's a little bit of a cultural kind of way of life, so to speak. Like I remember I was talking to somebody at Toyota who was saying that basically they all get trained in lean and continuous improvement and stuff like that, but they don't necessarily always approach every single project from a kind of practical practitioner lean point of view. It's what they want though is a culture where people think about waste, they think about getting that unit through the process as fast as possible from the beginning. Like, so even though your role's changed, do you still use lean either kind of traditionally or culturally now?
It's definitely not as much as I used to. However, there's what has become virtually a topic of conversation in every conversation I've had of late is most businesses have adopted versions of sort of the first layer of value. And as we talk about where leading players are going next and where they collectively see things happening after that, it's coming back into play. Like to take the QA example, to then share with people how that tool that the call center is using to help with their compliance reviews actually can help them with their marketing cross-sell strategy. Like never in 100 years would they have made that connection, but and never in that long would the digital marketing cross-sell team go spend time in the call center to figure out how their AI models could be retooled in order to expose, you know, thousands of customers that are going through certain life events that would then benefit for certain cross-sell opportunities. So it definitely is there for sure. It does require both the technologists and the functional leaders, as it always has in one function, to see how it could be used in other areas. But deploying the tech is not one thing. Understanding their processes and their policies and what drives their existing, in that example, marketing strategies is just as important as understanding what the downstream tech might do to help them. So it's the same skill set. It's the same integrated thinking.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And how would you recommend people who are interested in Lean Six Sigma and stuff like that? How would you recommend they get started if they want to learn a bit more?
Yeah, I think just learning about, as they probably have learned about, you know, smart IVRs or any given tech in the past decade or the decade before that, spend a lot more time in what AI models are out there, what competitors are doing. And then just, again, like any other tech, find a good cross-functional group of people that might be using AI in one function and say, how could those models be fine-tuned or redirected to shed light elsewhere. I don't really see it as any different. I just think most businesses are probably focused mostly on optimizing one part of their business. And it will be, once they're comfortable with that, that those that are sort of have roles that cut across the business will be able to dive into how to best use it. It's wildly powerful, and probably a lot more powerful than previous technologies that I've found. To be able to, again, look at a QA solution, 99% of the people will assume that it's a QA solution, but it's a tough leap to make connections to credit policy or marketing policy or risk policy on the complete other side of the business.
Yeah, yeah, wicked. Well, Scott, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you all for tuning in. I'll put the link to Prodigal in the show notes, prodigaltech.com, if you are interested. If you have any other resources regarding Lean that you'd prefer to share, then please do send them across and we'll stick that in there. I do have a Lean Six Sigma mini tab book. It's almost like a worksheet kind of thing that I've kind of been going through, but it's pretty intense. It's like, I don't know if you obviously being a super master black belt, you probably will have used all this stuff, but like, it really does recommend the hard mathematical science side of Lean, whereas most people's working knowledge, I don't know if it needs to be that to that degree. I think maybe there's a space in between being an absolute Lean practitioner and being able to take the principles and apply it in your work, you know. So if there's any other resources that you've got that will help people, that would be great.
Perfect, will do.
Nice one. Thank you so much, Scott. Really appreciate the time. Thank you all for joining me, and do not forget, I'll put the Prodigal Tech link in the show notes, and also don't forget, check out the Unparsed conference, unparsedconf.com, in London, June 17th to 19th. We're gathering the countries and actually the world, as people come from all over the place, AI practitioners together in one place to share best practice, emerging best practice, insights, learnings, connections, networks, beers, drinks and food. All right, thank you so much. See you soon.